Chapter 1. Before war started. The events of childhood are decisive. Pleasant memories keep us happy for a lifetime, whereas bad ones can never be forgotten. My memories go back to the town of Rajin Podlaski, a small, sleepy county seat between the rivers Bug and Vistula in the centre of Poland. I lived there with my parents, two sisters, and an older brother in a typical Jewish shtetl. Even as a child, I knew that being born and growing up in this town and in this country could only mean misfortune for a Jew. As Jews, we learned very early in life that most Polish children had ingested anti-Semitism along with their mother's milk. For that reason, we had to learn at an early age to live with anti-Semitism. I remember the terminology used by the Polish government then, calling Poland a major power in Central Europe. According to them, Pilsudski was a great general, and Poland claimed colonies in Africa as Germany was demanding more living space. I remember one of the traditional Lag BaOmer outings from my Hebrew Tarbut school to a forest, kilometres from town. With 250 students, we started out at 6 a.m. and marched to the woods where we planned to stay until evening. The sun was shining as we played and sang. In the early morning, three drunken Polish hoodlums suddenly appeared. They threatened our principal and the teachers with knives and demanded that we leave the woods immediately. All attempts to placate them were in vain. They claimed that we made the woods smell of garlic and Jews, which was not to their liking. In any event, forests were not made for Jews. The situation became so tense that we were forced to leave. Another time, I spent my summer vacation with the Jewish Zionist youth organization, Hashomer Hatzair, to which I had belonged from my early youth. Far away from Polish villages, we lodged in barns and tents, and were always careful not to attract the attention of the Poles. Also unforgettable was the widespread lie amongst Polish children and some adults that Jesus had been a Pole and the Jews had killed him. This often heard accusation sounded as if the event had happened only yesterday, and every Jew was implicated in the crime. For that reason, we Jewish children were ridiculed with insulting songs which I still cannot forget. At Christmas and Easter, the accusations were revived with new insults and affronts, often further emphasized by breaking windows. In the Polish Gem, most of the discussions were accusations against Jews. At the universities, Jewish students were heckled and often attacked by Polish anti-Semites. It was the in thing in Polish society to be an anti-Semite. When Pilsudski died, the Poles told us that our benevolent grandfather was dead and that bad times were coming. They were right. Soon thereafter, Polish anti-Semites, by orders of the government, were standing at the doors of Jewish shops, prohibiting customers from entering. There were days when Jews did not dare to leave their houses, and there were pogroms organized against the Jews. Every year at Pentecost, thousands of Poles from the cities and the countryside gathered in Rajin for an anti-Semitic mass meeting of the rightist ND party. The gathering was organized by two well-known anti-Semites of this area, the senator and great landowner Prince Szczedrzeński and his colleague the Sejm delegate Bakon. Discussions at the meeting were devoted exclusively to anti-Jewish sentiments. Among us Jews in the town, there was a foreboding atmosphere of an immigrant pogrom. The next day dawned before we could breathe freely. Only a few windows were smashed in Jewish houses, and other provocations occurred, but no pogrom. I will never forget the sight of the Jewish neighborhood of Brest-Litovsk, which I saw one day after a pogrom in 1935 or 36. It was in the early evening. The streets and sidewalks were littered with broken glass, and feathers from torn pillows and bed linens were still flying around. The houses and shops of Jews, if they hadn't been demolished, were barred, boarded up, and bolted. Not a single Jew was to be seen in the normally bustling Jewish streets. This incident made a horrible and unforgettable impression on me. I was 12 years old at the time. Sometimes I felt that I had known from my earliest days in the cradle that there was no place in this country or city for young Jews of my upbringing, class, and education. Due to these circumstances, we matured very quickly. We were interested in everything that happened around us, in our homes, schools, youth organizations, sports, books, and also in conversations which we heard, sometimes without wanting to. Such talk usually dealt with anti-Jewish discrimination and with the libel that Jews were to blame for everything that was bad. We had to defend ourselves continually against injustices and false charges of all kinds. At that time, more than 3 million Jews lived in Poland. The daily life of this minority was evidenced by poverty, cultural suppression, limited freedoms, economic boycott, persecution, and vicious anti-Semitism. The Polish anti-Semites, a group largely identical with the ruling class, thought they should equal or even surpass the Nazis' intense hatred of Jews. The persecution of the Jews was executed by the simple Polish people who were managed and encouraged by the ruling class. In Poland, a country of misery, overwhelming problems, and religious fanaticism, the Jews were always used as scapegoats and were found guilty of everything by the parliament, press, and church. In the late 1930s, the situation became more tense. Boycotts and Jew baiting were intensified. It was risky for Jews to be seen in some streets, and travelling through a number of villages was especially dangerous. The Poles even built a concentration camp in Berezy Kartuszka. The famous Polish pride had free rein at the expense of the Jewish minority. Most Polish people basically agreed with that policy. Democracy was as foreign to the general population as it was to the ruling class. Under such conditions, we lived in the hope of a better future. This hope gave us the courage and the strength to withstand the day-to-day humiliations. We regarded our situation as an unpleasant transition period in a hostile place. The Jews knew how to get along, relying on determination, patience, and humour. Jewish cultural life was alive and flourishing in Poland, like nowhere else, and we all participated. In the town of Radzyń, which was inhabited by approximately 5,000 Jews and about twice as many Poles, the Jews lived their own lives. The Hebrew Talmud school, the big library, the youth's thirst for knowledge, and the activities of the different parties and organizations were the focus of Jewish life. My small existence, like that of my friends, centered around my parents' home, the Hebrew school, and the Zionist youth organization, Hashomer Hatzair. There, on the fertile ground of the diaspora, we were nourished with love for Eretz Israel. It was unnecessary to teach Zionism. We were born into Zionism, and we grew up with it. The Polish national holidays of May 3rd and November 11th were only pro forma holidays for us. Our holidays were Purim and Chanukah. The biblical prophets and Bialik were our poets. Negev, Judea, and Galilee were our provinces. The pictures we drew as children always depicted the sun, palm trees, and the Star of David. Our coins went into the Keren Kayemet piggy banks. We were always concerned about recent developments in Eretz Israel. When we weren't speaking Yiddish with each other, Hebrew became our common language, and thus we lived our own lives. I was supposed to go to Palestine and attend an agricultural school at Ben Shemen, but things turned out differently. There were only a few Jews who were willing to do without the cultural or religious ties to Judaism in order to assimilate into Polish society, but even they did not succeed. Although they actually were not Jews anymore, they could not become Poles either. The ruling class of the country and the majority of the Polish people rejected any Jewish tender of friendship and loyalty. Instead, they treated Jewish citizens as hostile outsiders who could be seen as scapegoats for anything. Literally everything that was bad or unsuccessful in this country, and a great deal was bad and went wrong, was attributed to the Jews. Many Jews were attracted by Zionist slogans, but they also influenced by communist and socialist catchwords and became members of these political organizations. There was constant friction between the parties in order to win supporters and to prove that their respective ideology was the best. The agitators proclaimed their wonderful slogans, tailored to fit any situation, and often peppered with impressive foreign words that they almost sometimes hardly understood. The Zionists limited themselves to helping the Jews. The communists, however, wanted to make the whole world happy. For this reason, the former were able to realize their plans, whereas the others still find themselves today only where they were at that time. We were preoccupied primarily with the frightening news from Germany, which overshadowed everything else. We had an idea as to what awaited us from the Nazis, but we could not imagine the extent of the destruction that followed. We wanted to flee, but found that all the gates had been closed. The seriousness of our situation was demonstrated to the world at the Conference of Evian shortly before the war started, while Hitler was trying to put his anti-Jewish laws and measures into effect. At that time, the Jews were able to leave Germany and Europe. Unfortunately, no country was willing to accept them. The first act of the ensuing Jewish tragedy actually took place at Evian in 1938. After Kristallnacht, the annexation of Austria and the German entry into Czechoslovakia, we saw the invasion of Poland and the beginning of the war on September 1st, 1939. Unrest spread throughout the country. Food and other basic items were hoarded and hidden, while the streets filled with soldiers. Wives and mothers cried for their recently recruited husbands and sons. In the streets, the number of refugees increased. Blackouts were ordered, and people became confused and insecure. The chaos had begun. Sorrow and fear could be seen on the faces of the people. Although we actually were not unhappy, we children tried to look sad, because it was expected of us. The monotonous life of our small town was suddenly over. Somehow we were impressed because everything had changed at once. Nobody was really working, and everyone spoke with each other. We could even walk down streets which previously were unsafe for Jews. Soon one saw Polish soldiers in increasing disorder and elegant Polish officers with beautiful boots, capes, and perfectly fitted uniforms. We children had our first amusing moment when officers carrying maps in leather pouches on their soldiers asked us the way to Romania. Any 10-year-old who had ever studied geography knew that Romania was as far from our town as from Warsaw. Still, we enjoyed telling the soldiers to look at their own maps and convince themselves. Soon we also became familiar with the German Stukas and Messerschmitts. The local Polish authorities ordered us to dig trenches on the edge of town in which we could seek protection from the German bombers. 2 or 3 days after the war began, I had just finished digging a trench near our house when suddenly I heard the drone of German aircraft. Instinctively, I ran away from the ditch. Within a few minutes, several bombs fell into the same trench, and the entire area was under machine gun fire. In the town itself, bombs also fell. Houses were destroyed. People were injured, and some were killed. After this incident, I had the feeling that my life had been miraculously spared. This time it was not difficult. But would it continue this way?